T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. You're listening to Chicago's number one sports station. 670 The Score is Chicago Sports. Chicago Sports is The Score. An Odyssey station. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. The Score!
This hour is brought to you by iParkit Parking App.
Hello.
Hub Arkish.
His expertise in football is second to none.
670 The Score's senior football expert.
You're talking to one of the great techno boobs of all time.
Executive editor of Pro Football Weekly.
This is probably too much information, but I always keep my phone in my back pocket. And I just feel like my ass is buzzing permanently at this point. It's crazy.
Shaw media analyst and sideline reporter for Westwood One.
We've got Joe calling in from Elgin.
I just want to say that you are so underrated. You're fantastic. You really are. You've got a great opinion. I would listen to you all day.
Breaking down the latest on the Bears and news from around the NFL.
When will the Bears give Allen Robinson his contract extension?
It's a puzzle to me. I don't understand why it hasn't happened yet.
Hub Arkish.
I'd love to poke you. I'm not going to now.
With Dan Bernstein and Layla Rahimi on 670 The Score. The Score.
Time for the second weekly installment of Hub Arkish, who you can find on Twitter at Hub_Arkish. He joins us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. The Bears are getting ready to travel to take on a really good team. And Hub, I guess we sort of are where we are with the opener. You had talked about this first chunk of games and some likelihoods here, and we should mention that Hub is coming to us on Twitch from up at Hallis Hall at twitch.tv/Chicago670, The Score. So, underdogs by a touchdown. What's at stake for the Bears outside of the whole Justin Fields piece of this?
Well, obviously, you know, they're out to win every game, and they believe they're competitors, and they want to make a statement. They want to go into Cleveland, where they are big underdogs, shouldn't get beat, and show that they don't just play well at home against bad teams. I think beyond that, they want to establish that they can win with either of their quarterbacks. And you know, nothing is official yet, guys. We're supposed to hear from Andy Dalton in about an hour. That's the normal routine here. And yet if he's injured and not playing, he won't speak. So we'll start to get a sense for this. It's just impossible to imagine, though, that not finishing the second half last week and knowing that these things get worse before they get better, that it isn't going to be Justin Fields' first start this week. And so, you know, I think that their main concern is to see him take a big step forward to be as competitive as they can and to see if they can have their defense, their running game, and an occasional big play from their rookie quarterback pull a big upset and really change the narrative around this football team.
Given the talent hub on that Cleveland team, that might be a very tall order. But let's start with something that should give us, I think, some encouragement. And that's the availability of potentially Eddie Goldman, Mario Edwards Jr., and an improvement to try to counteract Chubb.
Well, I mean, there's no reason that Mario Edwards wouldn't be back. So we assume they get him, and that is a big deal. You know, people have looked at this defense and not realized that they've been without their fourth best defensive lineman and one of their best pass rushers in Edwards. They're, you know, without two of their best players, Eddie Goldman and Danny Trevathan. Trevathan's at least a week away because he's got to spend 3 weeks on IR. We don't really know any more about Eddie Goldman right now than we do about Andy Dalton. You know, he did come out and practice on Wednesday last week, which everybody was pleased to see, but then not at practice on Thursday. not able to go on Sunday. We just don't know what the status of that knee is. But, you know, the focus here with the Cleveland Browns, you got to stop the running game, or at least limit it and control it. That's how they're going to try and beat you. These two teams are going to play similar styles on offense. The Bears will not see anything that will surprise them. Don't know the status of Nick Chubb, who got banged up a bit on Sunday, and it would certainly be, you know, helpful to the Bears. Obviously, you never want to see anybody hurt, but it benefits them if Chubb can't go. They become a little more one-dimensional. Kareem Hunt has actually been the better back the first couple of weeks, but there's different styles involved here, so at least that helps. But yeah, at the end of the day, they want to get as healthy as they can on defense. They want to get some momentum out of that game last Sunday. Again, I'm going to keep coming back to it. It's not enough just to go out and play well in your home opener and show signs of the defense from a couple of years ago. You got to do it against a team that people are going to get excited about. And people get a lot more excited if this defense shows up this week than they were about them showing up last week against the Bengals.
We seem to take it on faith that if, in fact, Justin Fields starts, that the game plan will reflect what he wants to do and what he can do in a way that is reasonable. Yet, I don't know that it's necessarily going to be the case the way Matt Nagy talks about it and how he seems defensive about that. And that some when he was answering questions, there was this thread of pushback of the system's the system, and he knows all the plays, and there aren't just plays for him. And he's still very, very proud of all of his plays working for this quarterback, too.
Well, yeah, there's several different things in there. I don't know if Matt was defensive or not. I mean, I'm not commenting one way or the other. I actually, it figures with the little bit of drama that we had Monday morning, it's the only Nagy press conference I've missed this year, probably the last one I will miss. So I'm not sure where he's at right now. But, Dan, there is this tremendous misnomer out there that somehow the Bears have two different schemes, you know, one for Andy Dalton and Nick Foles and one for Justin Fields. That could not be further from the truth. It is one scheme. It is one playbook. What matters is which plays he calls depending on which quarterback is running it, and that's where it's going to get more interesting. But I think what you're going to see with Justin Fields starting is going to be, you know, 90-95% of what you've gotten used to seeing with Andy Dalton. And it's just a question of what plays they give him to try and be successful with. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what they decide is better suited to him than Andy Dalton.
We heard from Jason Peters yesterday, Hub, and I just thought it was really good commentary, not just about breaking down what he's seen out of Justin Fields, but just the run pass options, some of the things that the Bears do as well, and then his impressions of it all. And he's had a good couple games. I know he had that quad injury, but to come back and perform the way he did, how are people receiving him? Because he certainly feels like he's a leader.
Well, he is definitely a leader. He's an icon, if you will, at least in this building and in this locker room. And he's earned that, Layla. I mean, the guy is going to the Hall of Fame. He was the dominant player at one of the most important positions on the field for almost a decade. And the fact that he comes back at 39 with no offseason, a couple weeks of camp, and plays much better Sunday. I don't want to get carried away here. He still is not Jason Peters. He's got more room to grow. But he did play better than any left tackle game the Bears have gotten from anybody else in the last 5, 6, 7 years. There's still things that he's got to improve on. But to hear him talk and to hear him explain the game and to be as open and upfront as he was, I mean, that stuff about totally different pass protection depending on whether, not totally different, but very different technique in pass protection depending on whether Fields or Dalton is back there. I mean, it's real. It's not something that the novice or the casual observer is going to think about, but it's a real challenge on the offensive line and on Matt Nagy and the play calling and everything else. And so this is part of what they're trying to absorb, and it was really interesting and appreciated, you know, hearing him break it down for us Monday.
Oh, yeah, it might be my favorite interview all season, and that's saying something given the time we have. But here's where I think it's really notable is that he's a big guy. We all know this. And sometimes when you're big and it's been a while since you've been in the league and you're older, you're going to move slow. But he's not mailing it in here when he came here. This isn't just getting a check for him, it seems. And that interview is a big way of proving that, not just with his play on the field.
My impression of Jason Peters, and again, we've only gotten to visit with him a few times. We're just getting to know, but my impression is that he hopes to play a few more years. He is not here. You know, he said he's here to get a ring, and every player who's ever gone anywhere is going to say that. But watching this guy work, watching him play, and then listening to him, He doesn't care if he's 39 years old. He just wants to keep playing football for a while. So, you know, I don't think at this point we can predict anything past this week, because we know that with every player in the league, and the injury risk is so real. And, you know, I think the most impressive thing about it, though, is that he was dinged bad enough in that first game against the Rams that he didn't finish. He couldn't finish. And yet comes right back out to practice on Wednesday and then plays 60 minutes. And we keep worrying about what it means to be 39 years old and not having training camp. And he seems to be handling this better than any other kid on the roster.
I generally don't make too much out of one individual player absence in this league. But Jarvis Landry, the slot receiver being out, could end up being a huge break. Because that's really where the Bears have an obvious vulnerability in their nickel corner. Because as good as Jalen Johnson has been, Kendall Vildor has been okay. But that third guy, woof.
Yeah, I mean, it is a big deal. He is definitely Baker Mayfield's go-to guy. He's the security blanket. He's the best receiver. He's the biggest threat right now. And people don't realize how good this guy is. I mean, he's been a great receiver in the NFL for a while now. You know, so much made about him and OBJ being, you know, teammates and roommates and all that in college. I don't know if they were roommates, but I know they were very close. And yet he's turned out to be the guy, you know. And so the fact that he will not be able to play is definitely an advantage. And then you add to the fact that the Bears secondary took such a big leap in week two. And those corners, those young corners are playing pretty well. You know, they needed to get better at safety in the nickel. They got much better at safety. They didn't get better at the nickel. That's still a real problem. And so now, Dan, you really amplify it by saying, okay, everybody has to go three or four deep. But when you lose number one or number two, it's a lot harder to stress that nickel. You know, now you can do more with your corners and your free safety. So that is a very significant injury to keep an eye on in this game.
An extended segment of Your Phone Calls with Hub is in the offing. We've got a couple blinking lights. We need some more, so we'll get you right in line. 312-644-6767. It's you, it's Hub, it's Bears talk, it's NFL talk, and it's coming up on The Score. The bottom of the hour is brought to you by DuckDuckGo, and it's time for you to talk to our Bears and NFL expert, Hub Arkish, who is up at Hallis Hall, awaiting your questions for him. And we are going to start a ways away today. This is Mike in Jerusalem in Israel on The Score. Hey, Mike.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, hi, Hub. Happy Sukkot. I wanted to ask about David Montgomery's reputation, because last year, second half of the year, he was the third best running back in the NFL. He doesn't seem to get any national coverage. They don't notice him at all. He's behind a pedestrian offensive line with a play caller who doesn't appreciate running backs. And I was wondering if opposing teams realize how good he is, or is he also under the radar by the teams like he is in national coverage?
Well, Mike, there's a little bit in your analysis that is off there. First of all, yes, David Montgomery's become a really good back, and he had a great finish last year, but best running back in the NFL is a bit of a stretch when you got Derrick Henry and Dalvin Cook and Alvin Kamara and a few others. He is in that class now, and I think that's the question that you're asking. I also disagree that he doesn't have a coach who appreciates his value. You know, he certainly appreciates his value and actually has used him the first couple of weeks the way that I think everybody would like to see him use. They just didn't get enough plays in the Rams game, but he comes back and gets 20 carries last week, so they get it. As far as his reputation around the league, fortunately, he's a little bit of a well-kept secret in some spots, but people are starting to get it now because he is so good and because he really did just start to emerge those last six games last year. He was already good, but not realizing that he was a feature back until late last year is fairly new. I think the opener against the Rams, even though they lost that game, helped to extend that a little bit. And yes, people around the league are starting to figure it out real fast. He is definitely respected now as one of the top backs in the game.
And you being wished a happy festival of the harvest was just the cherry on top of that one. That was awesome. Eric in Champaign, you're on The Score with Hub.
Hey, Hub, I had a question for you, but first, I just happened to notice today is the 34th anniversary of the 87th strike, and it was just reminded me of the scab games and everything, and I wonder if you remember which Bear benefited the most directly after that. I think he was the first NFL player to get free agency as a result. But my question was, with Deshaun Watson, with the shape that the Texans are in, how is it they're not even considering playing him, considering the guy's never even been charged with a crime or anything yet?
Well, I don't know if you're talking John Wojciechowski or Jim Althoff, but I'd say Sean Payton benefited from it more than anybody, considering where his career went, even though it wasn't as an NFL quarterback.
Oh, he was so bad, though.
I was
at that game against the Saints. Oh, my God.
Yeah, he was a terrible quarterback then, but do you think that he gets where he got, you know, without that start? He probably does. He's a great mind, but it certainly didn't hurt him. It certainly helped him. So that one was worth noting. But to the point, which unfortunately now I forgot the question was.
Deshaun Watson, why they wouldn't consider playing him.
Well, because, you know, guys, this is, I don't want to say it's politically correct, but it is politically correct. It's just, it's a supercharged situation in which, while you are innocent until proven guilty, when there is this much smoke, and you know all the expression about when there's smoke, there's fire, and there is smoke everywhere around this guy, for them to put him out on the field, it would make the Houston Texans look every bit as insensitive and incompetent as he accused them of being when he started his whole conflict with them in the first place. And that's just Houston. You then get to the league level, which is not put him on the reserve list because he's not playing and they're not using him. But and that's why they announced right away that he wouldn't be playing Thursday night when they knew Tyrod Taylor went down. It keeps the league from having to disqualify him anyway. The NFL wants no part of Deshaun Watson being the face of the NFL until there is some, you know, understanding and evidence and facts and reality about what went on. No, nobody is saying that he's guilty yet, but you also can't say that he's innocent yet, and the NFL just does not want this to be something that they're considered, not being sensitive to, not taking seriously enough, and not considering to be a really serious issue.
And now it's Frank in Oak Park with Hub on the Score.
Hub, I was looking over the Bears' schedule to see what games this rickety offense might still win with a heroic performance by the D. That tiff with the Raiders in a few weeks is starting to move from question mark to a solid no with Vegas wins against the Ravens and Steelers. Hub, do your league experts think Chucky and Mike Mayock have put together a squad that can actually win a playoff game or two?
Oh, I cut him off. Because he hangs up the phone, and I always try to beat him to the hang-up.
Well,
unbelievable. That was a good call from Frank.
It was. I do want to suggest that he just keeps doing Frank and doesn't try and do John Facenda. But other than that...
No, it's... I think he's doing Boomer Berman.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, he probably was, now that you say...
But isn't Berman doing Facenda?
Maybe, yeah.
All right,
know.
Team.
I think Chris is pretty much doing Strictly Chris, but that's a different story. I don't know what to make of the Raiders, guys. I don't know if anybody around the league knows what to make of the Raiders. They had a huge win over the Ravens, but nobody saw it coming. And then they come back and play a pretty impressive game in Pittsburgh, but they're doing it out of character. They're not using their running game. They haven't had Josh Jacobs. They completely rebuilt that offensive line, and we're not sure yet how good it is. And we know that the defense still isn't very good. So can they win a playoff game? Well, they've beaten two playoff teams in the first 2 weeks of the season. So I think you have to say, yeah, the possibility is there. But this also takes us to what should be the consistent and only conversation the first 3 or 4 weeks. We don't really know who any of these teams are yet. I mean, you know, which Green Bay Packers team should we count on? Which New Orleans Saints team should we count on? Even the 49ers, who are 2-0, have had all kinds of stumbles getting there. So it's too early to tell. I'm not buying the Raiders yet because I just don't think they're good enough on defense. And I think teams now see what they're doing with that passing game. Although, you know, we've seen the hot quarterback usually can dominate. And Derek Carr is the hottest quarterback in the NFL right now. So I don't discount him, but I'm still not ready to buy it.
Steve in Peoria, you're on the Score. Say hi to Hub.
Hey, Hub. Hi. Quick question for you. Based on the results, Nagy has not had success in plays in the red zone. With all the statistical analysis that's available, can they not go and analyze the most successful teams that in the red zone, analyze what plays they are using, and then maybe incorporate those? I know it's against Nagy's nature, but wouldn't that be something to try? Because we are abysmal on getting this red scoring. In the red zone.
Scoring, yes.
Well, Steve, you know, first of all, again, it's early. Second of all, it's not Nagy who hasn't had success in the red zone. It's the Bears. It's the players. It's the coaching staff. It's everybody. We don't know exactly what Matt called, what he wanted to do, and how he hopes it was executed. I can tell you that it doesn't take a sophisticated analyst to look at the tape of that game and see Justin Fields missing a very open Jimmy Graham in the middle of the end zone when he decides to throw it out of bounds trying to chase Darnell Mooney with a late throw. So that's just one example, you know, where they take the ball over in the nine. There have been mistakes. There's been the false start penalties. There's so much going in that I don't think that the red zone issues yet are necessarily something that you want to hang on Matt Nagy and his play calling. I think we got to wait and let this develop a little bit more. I have been stunned that they haven't used Jimmy Graham more, particularly in the red zone. We'll see what happens this week if they get there against Cleveland.
Josh is calling from Pontiac. It's very possible he's in prison, but maybe
good
he's
morning,
not,
Hub.
And he's on the score.
Good morning, Hub. Quick question. Could you analyze what is going on with the Bears' tight ends? You're just talking about red zone. You got Graham, they got James, they got a high commit, height they can commit. It just seems like they're not on the field, or we can't see them, or what's going on with the Bears' tight ends is my question. Thanks, Hub.
Well, yeah, Josh, they're on the field, and you can see them. They actually spent a surprising amount of time in three tight end sets on Sunday, which I don't think a lot of people noticed. And I'm not sure, you know, what a lot of that was about, because the play calling when they were out there didn't seem to consistently focus on one goal. So they're out there. J.P. Holtz, even a fourth tight end, is getting snaps. I think the issue is a combination of when Fields is on the field, a bit of an inexperienced quarterback. With Dalton, it's a little harder to explain. Cole Kmet has shown flashes of taking the next step and being really, really good. But, man, dumb penalties hurt, you know, and he's had a few of them now. You know, as far as Graham, that's the mystery to me. I don't understand why he's not being used a little bit more. And again, you know, you're through a couple weeks now. This is what has to sort itself out. A big post-up type basketball player who can almost always be open can be a great security blanket to a rookie inexperienced quarterback. So we'll see what Justin Fields does with Jimmy Graham this week, or if him and Cole Kmet have a connection. But that's, you know, one other issue I've wondered about, and I have no problem with the Justin Fields package, if you will. I understand why they're doing it. It makes sense, and used properly, it could be very effective. But you do have to wonder, when quarterbacks are running on and off the field and nobody's really sure for 20 minutes how set they are, you know, how comfortable do they get? How do they develop chemistry with these receivers? And how do they begin to know, you know, who their favorite targets are and where they're going to be when they're supposed to be there? So there's just been so many moving parts that I don't think it's a concern yet, but it is a bit of a puzzle. I agree with you on that, Josh.
Steve is in Logan Square. He's on the score with Hub.
Hey, Hub. I was just wondering, do you have any inside information as to why the Bears weren't able to bring back Desmond Trufant after they cut him because he had to leave for family issues?
Well, they were able to. They chose not to. You know, Steve, unless there's a story that I'm not aware of, they cut him. He was on the street. They made a few other moves, and then the New Orleans Saints went out and signed him. You know, so when you say why the Bears weren't able to, I think it's more the Bears chose not to.
This is usually that time, Hub, at the end of this segment where we ask you what you think of the game, what you're feeling, where you're leaning.
You know, I continue to think the Cleveland Browns are a little bit overrated. I continue to think the Bears are a little bit underrated. But there's no doubt in my mind that the Cleveland Browns are the better football team, the more talented football team right now, and playing better football, and they're at home. And, you know, they need a big game. You know, they let one slip away in Kansas City. The Texans should not have been as competitive as they were for 30 minutes before the Browns finally put that one away. So, you know, ignoring the injuries the Browns have, I expect them to play one of their better games. I think the Bears will come out and fight. I do think the defense is for real, but I just don't know that they're ready for this yet, particularly with the rookie quarterback. Now, Justin Fields is the wild card because, you know, he could go out and make three plays to change the game. But I can't justify finding a way to say the Bears are going to win this one. I suspect the Browns win it, and I'm afraid with the mistakes that rookies are going to make at quarterback, there could be a turnover or two that could turn it into a 10-14 point game.
There you have it. Hub, always appreciate it. I know that we hear so much activity going on behind you at Hallis Hall. It means that things are coming to life there, and you got work to do. We'll let you do it.
All righty, guys. We'll talk to you Monday. Take care.
Thanks, Hub.
That is Hub Arkush. And I just saw a stat cross about a rising star on the Bears that does nothing to take away what have been increasing expectations for this young man's performance. I think it's really cool. It's from Next Gen Stats. Also want to hear from Mike Lombardi when we come back, because he talked about how he thinks the Bears would have to play to win on Sunday. And he doesn't, I guess, believe in the Justin Fields savior narrative like maybe some do, well, to put it simply. We're Bernstein and Rahimi.
Defeat.
You have the score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Snap to Burrow. Looking right, throwing right. It's intercepted. Intercepted by Roquan on his horse. 40, 30, 20, 10, 5, end zone. Touchdown. Touchdown, Bears. Pick six. On a house call for Roquan Smith.
How we stuck together as a defense, you know, there was a lot of adversity we faced last week. You know, a lot of people saying this and that, but we don't really care about that. It's about the guys that's in that locker room and the guys that's on that defense. And we was more so worried about that, knowing, playing to the best of all of our ability. We knew if we do that, we can, a lot of great things could happen.
Bernstein and Rahimi, 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We talked about the play earlier with Mike Florio and what it means for someone to do that, what it says to the league, and your reputation is made by big plays that change games. But that's why we have other stats. That's why we look at PFF. That's why we look at some of the movement stats that we get from Next Gen. And as you heard there from Roquan Smith, and you heard the highlight from Jeff Joniak on our sister station, WBBM News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM, this is from Next Gen Stats. Roquan Smith had a 53-yard interception return for a touchdown, as he's proven to be one of the best at his position in pass coverage. Smith is allowing minus 40.9 expected points added when targeted in coverage since the start of 2020. That is the best among all defenders in that span. That's not just inside linebackers. That stat is tops among all NFL defenders.
And he's been the part of a story that has just permeated this week among Bears fans. And I've got some news about that, actually.
You do?
Yes. Our friend Courtney Fong, who was the person who Roquan gave his touchdown ball to, was able to give it back. And he's going to join the show tomorrow.
Oh, awesome. So to actually hear the story and talk how he got the ball, and then he took to Twitter or Facebook or an offer.
Twitter, yeah.
Yeah, Twitter's like, I have the ball and I want to get it back to Roquan. Apparently the Bears facilitated it and there was an exchange of the valuable things.
Yes, and the exchange was plentiful and interesting. And he's going to join us to talk about it tomorrow, because apparently Mike, he said he credits us with helping get the story.
Well, you helped it happen, Layla. I mean, you shared the story. It took that story to the next level, and he appreciated that.
Well, I thought that was pretty cool. We're definitely looking forward to him. It's been a story that has just been really, really wildfire on social media for all the right reasons.
That's
going to
be fun.
Nice. It's nice, warm, and fuzzy.
On this first day of fall, yes.
Hope you enjoyed your summer.
Hope you enjoyed your summer.
It's over. I didn't say it like that. Hey, wait, is this the day where you can stand a broom up?
Or an egg? I thought it was like a raw egg you can stand. Ray Raynor used to do this on the vernal equinox and the autumnal equinox.
That's
and,
today.
Yep. Either, and then there was the solstice where there's the twin solstices, which where you're supposed to be supposedly. I forgot what it is. I don't know. Maybe you do a headstand or something.
I was born on one of them almost.
Almost.
Yeah. I was like 12 hours off or something.
No, it doesn't
actually
count,
less than that, according to my parents.
Odyssey NFL insider Mike Lombardi is on Weekly with Mully and Haw, as he was this morning, and he thinks that if it comes to beating the Browns, the Bears are going to need Roquan Smith at the peak of his powers and all of his other defensive mates to be the difference.
I don't see this offense being explosive at all, whether Dalton's the quarterback or Fields. There's just, I mean, it just hasn't been in Nagy's forte. I mean, I know he's an offensive guru, but it just hasn't been, they haven't been an explosive offense. I mean, I think Bears fans, as much as they may hate me, they might would at least admit that, you know, that they're just not an explosive offense. And they haven't been that creative as an offense. I mean, once he gets past the script, then we're off to something else. So I think they got to win games with defense. I mean, look, here's the thing. We've played two games in the National Football League this year. You got to sit down in your office and say, okay, how do we have to play to win this game? And the, one of the things the Bears must do is not turn the ball over.
Good advice.
He's good, man. He just is.
I disagree with his belief that Justin Fields is primarily a single-wing quarterback at this point, and he's going to make plays with his feet but not his arm. Have you watched this guy?
No,
what his teammates are saying about his ball placement on the move? Come on.
Bilal Nichols, we heard him earlier. The thing that he likes the most about Justin Fields is accuracy. That was something that came out in his draft grades. I appreciate Mike Lombardi's perspective because he's so confident in it and he makes a lot of good points, and I just like the analysis because that's also likely something others in the league are looking at.
Yeah.
That assessment and the way he puts it together.
I don't have to agree with him to like listening to him.
Correct.
I think he's a good listener.
I think usually he is correct. But when it comes to the idea that Justin Fields is one-dimensional, I disagree.
I do too.
Very much so.
I do too.
I don't even mind that he holds on to the ball because he's probably looking for something good. Unlike other quarterbacks. Because when they held on to the ball, it wasn't good. Not that we remember that or anything.
That's PTSD, Layla. I'm Dan Bernstein. We'll do transition with Lawrence Holmes next on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.